Welcome back to The Exchange. I'm Alexandra Gutierrez, and I have with me writer Clayton Hansen. His second book was just released, and the subject should be familiar to residents of Unalaska. Mr. Morris focuses on friendship and adventure on the Bering Sea. It's great to have you with us, Clayton.
My pleasure.
For listeners who are picking up a copy of your book, what can they expect when they read it?
They can expect a book that's set in Alaska. A lot of the action occurs on a crab boat. It's about the dynamic of male relationships and the legacies passed on from fathers to their sons and daughters, whether or not the father's even present. It's how familial actions reverberate. And it's about male relationships, brothers, and whether traditional or not.
Could you tell us a little bit about the two characters, Nick and Max? I mean, did you draw your inspiration for these two from any of your friendships, or sort of what made you decide that you wanted to kind of, you know, develop their relationship specifically?
I wanted to develop their relationship from the beginning. They have a lot of contrast between them. One's from a stable family and one's from an extremely unstable family. And the boy who's from the stable family has a legacy in an unstable business, which is crabbing. And so there was a lot of push and pull in my mind about between the two of them. And neither of them are bad or good. There's a lot of gray area in between them. And that was that was an easy draw for me, actually, because there's not a set hero, because the guys who do something good turn around and do something bad, and it kind of replays itself that way throughout most of their lives.
Mm-hmm. And is there any character that you particularly identify with?
Not really. At the beginning, I was writing both characters were sort of like me, and then I had to make the conscious effort to split them off because I didn't want people to see them as me, and they sort of sounded alike. And because it's a lot more... it's liberating when someone isn't you that you're writing, because you can have them, you know, you can have bad things happen to them and you don't have to weigh in yourself personally. You can let them sort of be free.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get too specific, but definitely a lot of bad things happen to these two in the books. I mean, is that sort of cathartic to have that kind of emotional separation where, you know, you kind of have complete control over these characters' lives, but they're not really standing in for you?
It is. It's really cathartic, but the flip side is it also makes me sad when it ended and when some things happened and I wanted to change them and make things a lot happier, but it just wasn't true to the story. And it's actually been a little strange for me when I've had people come up to me and tell me that they've been sad during certain parts, because I didn't think of it that way. I don't consider the reader when I'm writing. I just kind of write, and then someone said that they made them really sad, and I kind of felt guilty. Or, you know, it was like I was manipulating them without even knowing it.
Well, it was weird.
But.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that. And what was your inspiration for, I guess, this very sad story?
Well, my first book was a vampire book, and it was something that I thought a lot of people could have written, and so I had to write something that was a little closer to home with in Alaska, and something that I had a better grip on. And then the story actually felt like it was more of controlling itself than me actually dictating the terms for it, because in some ways I wish I did write a happier book, and it made me sad when I was writing it. It was a little... emotionally depressing, you know, mm-hmm. But
and
that was just the story that I had in me, and which is kind of funny because most of my friends think I'm a pretty gregarious and amusing fellow.
Yeah, I mean, knowing what I know about your biography, you're not a crab fisherman. You're actually a political reporter in Washington, D.C. I guess, does your work as a journalist bleed into your fiction writing, or do you sort of try to shut off that part of your brain when you're working on a novel?
Try and shut that part off. I think there have been so many thrillers, and everything is written, has been written in D.C. You know, it's been overdone. It's a seat of power, and there hasn't been enough written about Alaska, and it's a state I love, and the weather and the scenery and the landscape itself actually is its own character, and I kind of wanted to explore that as well. Plus, it helps me if I miss home, if I'm writing about home.
Mm-hmm. And you grew up in Adak. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience there?
Yeah, I lived on Adak for a while for three years with my family. And it was, part of the experience is the wind. It just never stopped blowing. And it was kind of fun. And it was kind of strange to be that set off from the rest of the world because we'd only get our mail once or twice a week. And in February and March, when the weather was bad, we wouldn't get any mail at all. And there was this, you were basically having to find ways to amuse yourself. It was great. And I'd love to go back out there and visit someday.
What's sort of your background in terms of your knowledge of the fishing industry? I mean, do you have friends growing up who became crab fishermen? Have you ever fished yourself?
I've never crab fished. Of course, I've done all the other sport fishing that is so common in Alaska. I've had friends who are crab fishermen and, you know, we had teased them because they'd come back exhausted and they looked like they'd spent their whole week or two at a time in a washing machine. They just looked completely frazzled. But then as we were teasing them, they would tell us how much money they made. And it was more than, you know, that you make when you're in high school and even in the early years of college. And so I could understand the draw. And part of me wanted to go out there and work and to see what it was like. And then you have the popularity of shows like The Deadliest Catch, and I can imagine it's such a money grab. You could have a lottery. It's basically a lottery out there, but you can also lose in a lot of ways, and sometimes they don't make any money at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of my draw. I wanted to do a little bit of research about that as well, so I was contacting friends. I tried not to watch Deadliest Catch because I just didn't want to anything to inadvertently work its way into the book.
How did you sort of, you know, create this community in your head?
Through looking at a lot of pictures. I did some research online as well about the history, and I was just checking out the pictures and trying to read whatever I can online.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of formed itself. I can't say how accurate it is not having been out there, but hopefully I at least come close, and all I can really ask for, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess I always find this kind of interesting because this place is, you know, for being a fairly small town, it actually has a pretty privileged position in the popular imagination. But, you know, since you haven't been out here, what questions would you have for someone who has lived out here?
I would be curious about how the crabbing industry actually affects the town, and not just with money, just overall. You know, you have some people who come in and you have a part-time population there with the processors, and just what it was like. And I would love to compare and see what it was like when I was living on Adak. And sometimes you feel, whether they feel isolated or not, and then if they do, are they happy that they're isolated? Because sometimes they really was.
Mm-hmm. And your book covers a large span of time. A lot of changes happened in the crab fishery during that time. And, you know, you kind of allude to sort of shifts in the management regime. But, you know, that's all sort of very technical. I guess, how did you sort of incorporate how all of that has happened into your novel?
It was one of the hardest parts, actually, because I needed to incorporate it through dialogue, whether, you know, when they're talking about the quota system and having people react to that, and then kind of a piece of expository information that it took me a long time to be able to work into it. And it was pouring over fish and game guides and then talking to some members of Congressman Young's staff, because I still didn't understand some of the things that were going on.
That's really interesting. Can you tell me a little bit more about, I guess, your, sort of gaining knowledge about this area of the world from talking to the congressional delegation staffers?
Yeah, it was, they were actually kind of amused, and they were wondering why I was asking, because I couldn't find the exact dates for all of the different crab seasons. And they just kept telling me that it depends on when they do studies and when they figure out the migration. And there were a lot of long-winded answers, and no one could tell me, like, it starts on this day and it ends on this day. And so there was a lot of back and forth, and for some reason I felt like they weren't being honest with me, or I didn't know if they were withholding information. But I guess they weren't. There are a lot of different factors that go into the different seasons.
Unalaska has a reputation for being kind of a rough and tumble fisherman's town to the rest of the world, where, I would say most locals would generally disagree with that, especially when you look at the nightlife scene. The Elba Room had a, reputation for being one of, I guess, the craziest bars in the world. In your book, you've got this bar, the Brass Buckle. What was your inspiration for that? Was it the Elba Room, or, was it something else?
It was, the inspiration was a bar in Bethel, actually, and well, now it's Shry, but at the time it was called the Brass Buckle, but a lot of the locals called it the Brass Knuckle, and that became a joke between my father and I. And, as I got older and then I started going into bars, he would say, like, oh, are you going into the Brass Knuckle? And I was like, well, yeah, even though I lived in Anchorage, and it would be, a much more liberal place, like a Humpies or something that doesn't even come close to that reputation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was sort of the inspiration. I just needed a scene where I could have them discussing what's going on and to show that they do know some of the locals, well, a few of the locals, I guess, and some of the other interactions that happen in that bar.
Mm-hmm. And, I guess, one final question I have for you is, how do you sort of juggle your day job of being a political reporter with, now having written a couple of novels? How do you sort of manage your time in that way?
When I'm in full writing mode, I write about 1,000 words a day until I think it's done, and then I do it again. Pretty emotionally taxing, I'll be honest with you, but if I don't stay on top of something that I'm writing, then even if I take a week off, I just don't care. I know what's how the story's going to end in my head, and I get lazy, and it'll kind of go away, and then I won't bother to pick it up again. So I know that once I do start, I really have to get after it as quick as I need to finish the novel as quick as I can. So it'll still be fun. But I'm learning now, and I'm taking notes on my next book, and it will be set in Alaska, and it's been a lot more enjoyable. I'm not pushing myself like I was. I'm taking just some notes and trying to enjoy myself.
And I guess, could you give listeners a hint of what's to come?
It'll probably be dudes again, because I found out that I don't think I write women very well, but it'll be set in Alaska, and there will probably be hockey because I grew up playing hockey.
All right. So. Great. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Clayton.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That was author Clayton Hansen. You can read a chapter of his book on our website at kucb.org. Thanks again for listening to The Exchange. I'm Alexander Gutierrez, and be sure to tune in again next time.